with Aaron Rodgers. As Rodgers has put it, let's have some fun. Let's just go out there and have some fun together. And if we do, terrific. If we don't, well, then let's start crunching the tape on Lenora Sellers and Paul Nussbaum and or Grant Nussmeyer.
No, you still got it wrong. Garrett Nussmeyer.
Garrett Nussmeyer and my man Drew Aller and all
your
of those
dudes.
Your
man Drew Aller? You want to hit your wagon to him?
I said that sarcastically.
All right, I'm just checking. Thought you were Austin Bechtold for a second.
Speaking of the odds makers, they have the Steelers as an underdog in 11 games right now.
All right,
11 of 17.
Both
Ravens games.
The road Bengals game for sure, and I would imagine both Bengals
both
games.
Both Bengals games.
Hold on.
That's four.
All right, so they also have the Steelers as an underdog, I would presume, in the Lions game on the road.
Yep.
In the Bills game at home.
Yes.
In the, this is good. This is juicy. In the Vikings game at home?
The Vikings game is not at home.
Or in Ireland, but listed as a home
game. Did you say the one in Cincy?
Yeah.
Yeah, both Cincy, both Ravens, Lions, Bills, Vikings in Ireland. That's seven, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Packers?
Yep. Like a Parsons effect.
At Chargers?
Yes.
That's nine?
4.5 point dog.
I want to say...
8.5 point underdog at Baltimore.
How about at Bears?
Yes.
10. Now, Donnie, do I go... I'm torn here.
All right, Natalie Imbruglia.
Oh, let's not start this again. I'm going to go down the rabbit hole.
Second reference to her in what?
I know. A couple of days.
Because Malzy keeps saying he's torn.
I'm between home with the Seahawks, who I don't think are good enough. I'll say at Patriots.
Yep, you nailed it. 11 games.
Sold, you bought them.
They play 17. They're favored in six, and two of them are against the Browns.
Two Browns games, a Jets game, a Colts game,
the
a Dolphins game, and a Seattle game.
Yep. So, guess what? I think they're going to exceed expectations.
Of course, because Tomlin never has a losing season.
I think they're better than the odds makers think. So that's why I've got them 7-10 on the year. And no, they will not make the playoffs.
Donnie? I think he almost tried to like hide that one here. Not because he's not proud of it.
I set it right up.
He wanted to just thud it in there.
Look at how I set it up. The odds makers think this team really stinks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they don't really stink. I think they just...
Official record prediction, 7-10.
Yeah. Which is the worst one so far by a wide margin. Stuck my neck out there on this.
No, it is giraffe
mode. And I think that'll be good for them because I think 7-10 will get them a top 10 pick organically.
Do you think that
I think 7-10 will get them to like the 9th or 10th pick.
Okay, hold on. Forget about
and
that.
And I think that in the long
that
run is good.
Snap them out of it. Will it snap them out of this like we make the playoffs, we go 10-7, we go 9-8, we get into the dance every year. Will it snap the owner out of the complacent kind of fog he's in?
No, will not.
Will it get through to the head coach that maybe you are in fact not all-knowing and can't just keep doing it
your
way?
No, they'll just write it up to having a quarterback that was in his 40s and it didn't work,
and
we gave it the college try.
We'll get a top 10 pick and draft a quarterback for me to put handcuffs on.
Fill up that tank of gas and get in your car and go down to South Carolina.
They're not going
to
get Sellers if he has a great year.
And go eat wings with him and go introduce yourself to...
What will he eat with Nussmeyer?
To Club Nick? At Clemson, and go meet with him a little bit, and then go hang out with Carson Beck and his famous girlfriend and everything else at Miami and do the quarterback tour. And we're going to trust you. Your mulligan was Kenny. You duffed it off the tee. You didn't even hit it to the ladies' tee, so you had to walk around with your Johnson out. It's true.
Yes, I am familiar with that rule, Pony.
Let's give you another crack at it here, is how they're going to do it. And I hope that they find a quarterback that's Tomlin-proof.
But if systemically and philosophically it doesn't change their minds or change Mike's mind or change Art's mind on maybe how things need to be, then why would anybody assume anything other than they draft a quarterback in the first round again,
mm-hmm.
Mike is terrified to let the quarterback actually play the position the way he's supposed to play it or the way you have to play it, and wash, rinse, repeat.
Now, would you say that Ben, for the most part, now he had some alleged off-the-field transgressions and... things that soured some fans, but you would say that Ben is pretty much universally loved here. Would you agree with that?
No,
you would not agree with that.
No,
Donnie, would you?
I think there are plenty of people who.
I would say 95% of Steelers fans love Ben Roethlisberger.
I do think that's pretty close. I mean, Ben has his haters, no doubt.
I think it's a very vocal minority.
I also think after the last 5 years, that group of people actually grew.
Absolutely did.
Appreciate what the guy did.
Appreciate. I thought at the end, I thought more than 5%.
Oh, wait, you thought the last 5 years of QB play made people hate him more?
No, I thought you meant like the last couple of years of Ben more, like, you know, 2021, I guess, oh,
I
really
think,
only 2 years.
I know, I mean, the QB play has sucked so bad. I think
distance
so many
has made the heart
like,
grow fonder.
Man, I miss this guy.
I agree 100%.
I thought more than 5% of Steelers fans when 2021 rolled around and it was will they or won't they cut him, and then he took their pay cut and made it seem like it was his idea. More than 5% of fans were of the mind of, why didn't we move on? This is stupid.
But then we proceeded to watch 5 years of pretty horrific quarterback play since.
Undeniable.
Bad quarterback play shouldn't make you reminisce that fondly about a guy who hasn't won a big game.
What are you talking about?
When?
Of course you do that. You don't think people do that with like the 13 Pirates team because it's been so long since we've had any good teams?
When was the last true big game Roethlisberger won? Big game.
I would say the Immaculate Extension game.
Which was in 2014 or 15.
No, I would say the
that
Chiefs.
That was 2016.
Yeah, 16? I would say the Chiefs game is probably
Le'Veon
then.
Bell 2016. Won that game.
So now like only one guy gets credit for a win and the guy that's there.
Actually,
playing...
Chris Boswell won that game.
He and Bell did. Where would you rank Ben on the list of people who were responsible for that win from the Steelers' perspective?
Why does that matter?
I'm saying, like,
I don't think every fan
was
is doing that math in their head.
It was a
where
divisional
they're...
game. Or it was, yeah, it was a divisional game. So
it was a game to get in the AFC Championship game. That's a pretty big game. That would be like saying, well, when they went to Indianapolis and beat the Colts in 05, it really wasn't that big of a game. It's the biggest game they won all year, bigger than the Super Bowl, in my opinion, that season. What are we doing here?
Wait, a divisional win against the Colts was bigger than an actual Super Bowl win?
Yes.
Interesting math. So I thought you just said at the start of the show, divisional and wild card games are by definition not championship games, but by your own definition, that divisional game was a bigger game than an actual
that
championship.
That was the Steelers' de facto championship game that year. Yes, it was.
Okay. That's an interesting
You disagree? You don't think that was the hardest game they played that year?
What?
Come on
playoffs?
Now. Yes. All season. That was the biggest game.
I mean, even though I was...
He's having his cake and eating like, it.
No, I'm not.
He's
I'm
having
not
his cake and eating it. He wanted to rip Tom Brady to start the show, and now he's changing the rules on the fly.
I'm 100% right about this.
The PBGI, Pony Big Game Index, scores that one higher than the Super Bowl.
Absolutely it was. They played a home game in the Super Bowl against Seattle. That was not as tough as going to Indy and beating a team that had blown them out earlier in the season.
Man, then how do you explain his play in that game? Super Bowl, that is.
Again, you're just moving the goalposts here to try to rip Ben, and I don't know why you keep doing that.
I also don't get how you don't think more people appreciate his play, even in his final years, given how awful the quarterback play has been since his departure. You really don't think people are like,
man, didn't know how good we had it with Ben.
I think that is precisely how a whole generation of fans think. You know why? I am generation of fans.
I don't know, man.
I am the man.
I'm watching guys like Kenny Pickett and Mitch Trubisky.
There were very few
to
times
like 13 points in a game.
There were very few times in his last season's pre-elbow injury where I felt like the dude could go anywhere and beat anybody, i.e. Brady. And the one time I really felt strongly about that was 18 when Juju fumbled away what looked like it would have been a very intriguing playoff run.
Chris, he had one bugaboo. He had one guy he couldn't get past, and it just so happened to be the greatest football player of all time. I think I'm going to forgive him for that.
What about the corpse of Peyton Manning in 2015?
Yeah, I mean, that was not... But okay, that was not a great loss.
What about Tim Tebow?
Not a great loss either, by any means. Neither was the Blake Bortles game, even though they scored 42 points because they got off to such a rotten start. But
also,
I mean,
Baker Mayfield.
I mean, the guy's 13-10 all time in the playoffs, and he's got two Super Bowl rings, and he went to three. Let's compare his playoff record to Peyton Manning's, or let's compare his playoff record even Aaron Rodgers, and I think he's going to look better.
I mean, the four MVP awards kind of skews the overall career.
No,
there.
I'm just talking about big games. You turned the conversation into I didn't trust him in big games.
I mean, I just feel like it's been a long time since he had won a bit. They had won a playoff game because he personally had a big game.
When was the last time Aaron Rodgers did that?
No,
we got people singing
real...
the praises of Aaron Rodgers right now. Find me that game for him.
And what did I say was going to happen to the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs?
You said destroyed in wild card game.
Here's a 3-1. Swinging the ball, blasted to right and into the first row seats. Home run. Turned around 99 and put it in the seats. Dodgers get one back. It's 4-2. Home run number 46 for Shohei Ohtani.
Someone got to block because there was no enthusiasm for that Ohtani home run that was absolutely hit like a laser out to right field. And we've heard block go crazy for some opposing team calls lately.
Maybe the Pirates
and
he no-sold playing better.
That and deadpan that like you couldn't believe.
Maybe the Pirates playing better has caused him to call it more down the middle. That ball was not hit as far, but it reminded me of the famous clip of Randy Johnson versus Mark McGwire, power on power at the Kingdom. McGwire turns around like 100, hits it about 550 feet, and the Mariners play-by-play man, Dave Niehaus, I think, yep, at the time, just completely loses any objectivity and basically goes, "Would you look at that? He just hit the ball out of the Kingdom." Kind of what I thought of. And then Bubba Chandler, did you guys catch the look on his face after that ball? He turns around, gets the ball back, and goes, "Whew!" Big exhale. Big boy got to him.
All right. Fan Hotline's presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We're waiting on the Steelers injury report. Cam Hayward was out there in the early part of practice. We'll see how much he did. He's scheduled to talk tomorrow. He'll clear up all of this contract stuff, you'd think. We'll have Aaron Rodgers later in the show talking about his first game with the Steelers, and it happens to be, coincidentally, against the Jets in New York on Sunday, 4 days away. Pirates and Dodgers tonight at PNC Park. Shohei Ohtani will pitch for the Dodgers, and I would also think he would be in their lineup against the Pirates tonight, too. By the way, what do we have here, Donnie? News?
I don't know if either of you follow that Talkin' Baseball page on Twitter. That's like the John Boy podcast. Shohei Ohtani initially listed as tonight's Dodgers starting pitcher, but now listed as the DH.
Oh, okay. So maybe something's afoot there.
What if he was lining up to pitch against a certain guy tomorrow in a big marquee matchup?
That would be awesome. Matt Clement joins us now, our 93.7 The Fan MLB analyst. Okay, so if it's not Ohtani tonight and it's him tomorrow or at some point later on, Matt, just let's go there to start. Your thoughts on just somebody in today's baseball being able to do both as well as this guy.
It's just amazing. I mean, it kind of reminds you last night, Jason Chandler, he hits that home run like, 120 miles an hour. And it's like there's this push for Schwarber to be the MVP, which probably in a lot of other years, he's easy the MVP. But when you think about what he's able to do and pitch and hit at the same time at that level, when you're working on both, it's like we've never seen before, honestly. And the longer he keeps doing it, the more the kind of the legend grows, because it's almost unheard of. I know how much time I had to put into just pitching and pitching at a very major league average level. To pitch at the top, to be able to pitch the top of the game and hit the top of the game every year is just incredible.
Matt, I don't know how much of a student of the history of baseball you are, or how much you immerse yourself, but I know, and we all know, that the sport loves its history and venerates its history. If he does this, pitches at this level, hits at this level, let's just argue for five more years, how could anybody not look at him and just say, that is the greatest baseball player who has ever lived? I know he wouldn't have the numbers Ruth would have in the end, but how could you not look at that and just look at the era, more wider net for talent being cast and everything else, and just say, "Yep, that's the greatest baseball player ever, right there."
I think you're right. It's like a 4 or 5 more years if he does it at the level he's done it, especially if the pitching picks back up again, which it probably will, coming off the surgery next year. The pitching isn't bad, but they're kind of easing him along, and it'll be interesting to see how the postseason goes with that. But he is on track to be, and who would have thought that? I mean, like it's unthinkable to me, because I feel like I'm a history. I do enjoy the history of the game. I got to play kind of in a time frame where there's a lot of great players and the ones before me and everything else. But it's like he's just doing what nobody else did. I mean, I guess Babe Ruth did it, but not to this extent. As far as the pitching side of things, he's just completely dominant. And when he's healthy and right, and the hitting side of things is just, it's just crazy. It's it'll be interesting to see. Will people get bored giving him the MVP, kind of like Jokic this year in basketball, and they used to do with Michael Jordan and even, you know, will they get bored giving him the MVP? Because that's going
to, I mean, that's a narrative based award to a large degree in like certain years. Like, they want to give it to like Jimmy Rollins on the Phillies won it and he was great. But I remember thinking that was like partly the narrative too. If it's supposed to be who's basically the best player, as long as the player is not on a hideous baseball team, he should win it every year that he keeps doing this. It shouldn't even be debated. He should just, if he puts up offensive numbers like this and is at worst a league average pitcher, starting pitcher, he should win it every single year.
I agree, and I doubt he'll be a league average starting pitcher when he's healthy, when he's completely back, which makes it even more incredible. It's like, you can't even argue. When people try to argue it with me, and I mean, what a year Schwarber's having, my gosh. It's incredible what he did last week. But like, there's no argument. If he's contributed on the pitching side, like you said, at an average level, but he has always contributed on well above average level there. And he's doing what he does at the plate. I mean, you know, the stolen bases, the whole package is pretty crazy.
Matt, another interesting stat that popped up last night after the Pirates beat the Dodgers was this one. Since July 1st, the Pirates are 26-27, and the Dodgers are 25-28. The Pirates have played pretty good baseball for the last few weeks, especially. How much stock do you put in the way this team has played when, really, from a like win-loss standpoint, where you are on the standings, they've been very low-stakes games because they've been in last place the entire year?
I think that, you know, it's kind of how you want to view the Pirates. If you're going to go from a pessimistic view, you can be like, most of these games are against lower teams in the division. Doesn't mean as much. If you want to look at optimism, it's like, you know, hey, this is what you want to build when you have a young team going forward and for next year, and you want to finish that way. And to me, like, credit goes to Donnie Kelly here, because I've been on teams where you're so far out of it, and it gets the dog days of August and that last month of September, and you're ready to get home and you have no chance and the games don't mean anything. But to keep the team playing, he deserves a lot of credit. And I think like Kutch and Tommy Pham and some of these veteran guys do too, because their attitude could wear off real quick. But I think the other side of that is you have a lot of young guys that want to be big league players. And they're getting their first taste or second taste or in their third year or whatever the case may be. And they're not just auditioning for, you know, the Pirates next year. Maybe it's for other teams, or maybe it's in a trade or whatever the case may be. So, you know, it doesn't matter how many people understand you're playing Major League Baseball and you're in the big leagues. So you're going to come to play, but it doesn't go that way across the board. So give the Pirates some credit here.
Matt, I'll ask you about this guy, because I think I pulled kind of a pony and reverse jinxed him last night. Henry Davis grounded into a double play with a man on second. That extended his streak to 0-42 with runners in scoring position. I tweeted that out. He then later got a hit and broke that slump. Just your thoughts on Davis and the lack of development at the plate, but more to the point here, how much were you cognizant of whether guys were scuffling in those situations? When you'd go over your game prep sheet, did you know, like, hey, so-and-so has this kind of a slump going on in a specific situation? How did you prepare for guys like that and attack them if you knew that they were maybe going through it mentally because of a slump?
Well, I mean, how you started it with the tweet and then it happened. Like, I was always very cognizant of who I was facing and what they always were. But, you know, if the time came up and I needed to, you know, make him get the hit, I was going to do that, the person that was struggling. Like, I wasn't going to let the person in front of him beat me, especially if he was hitting better. Or the person behind him, if he was doing well, I wasn't going to, you know, pitch me the same way. I was going to make him, you know, show he could get out of that slump in that situation. So, you know, but I was always the guy that, like, and to a little different degree, like, I'd play in Wrigley and the shadows would be out and our batters would come in after their first at bat, and be like they're blind and can't see the ball or anything else, and then I roll out there and give up three home runs. And so I never take those slumps and everything too far, because I'll be the guy that breaks the slump for the person.
Matt, this situation, I don't know how many of our listeners know it, but last night in baseball, the Astros, you had Framber Valdez, who's one of the best pitchers in the American League. They were playing the Yankees, and it looked like he gave up a home run on a pitch where he had a disagreement with his catcher. And then, right after that, it looked like he intentionally crossed his catcher up. So his catcher basically had to take a fastball right to the chest. I'm interested in stuff like this, like the game within the game, the interpersonal dynamics of teams and clubhouses and rosters and things like that. Like, what did you make of that? Like, is this something that actually happens sometimes in baseball? Like, your take as a pitcher on that situation last night.
I don't think I've ever seen a pitcher. Now, again,
allegedly,
he says he didn't do it on purpose, but I've never seen a pitcher on purpose try to cross up the catcher to get back at him. So I dug in and I read his, you know, his quotes a little bit, which didn't like terribly make him feel very innocent. And the other part of it too is when you watch, like, his reaction after it was almost like I did that on purpose.
The catcher certainly thought he did.
Yes.
Like, Salazar thought he did it on purpose for sure.
Yes. And you know, that's where, you know, professionalism comes in, because, like, you don't go out. I mean, I'll tell you this. He wouldn't have done that to Martin Maldonado when he was there, or Diaz, or Caratini, but he's going to do it to the kind of a journeyman that's been up and down. You know, but at the end of the day, you know, there's frustration. The pitch before, what I saw the pitch before was, he called a pitch, and Cesar waved him to step off.
Yep.
And he didn't step off and threw the pitch, because he set up real late, and he threw a meatball right down the middle.
Mm-hmm.
It got hammered for a home run. And you know, here's the thing too. Like, I always, when these situations happen, I think, okay, how could this have been right? You know, how could Valdez be right in a situation? I'm having a hard time figuring out any way he could have been right. But, you know, you get frustrated, things happen. You know, your mind starts going different directions, and he could have been thinking about that pitch before and threw that one. It's very possible.
How does that get handled in the clubhouse, man?
Yeah, good question.
Easy. I think that, as you could tell, when everybody came out, they said the right things when they came out. They said there was a manager's meeting. That's Joe Espada's got to get. He takes care of that before it even gets to the media, before anything happens. It probably got handled by the two other catchers, you know, with Valdez in the first place, not necessarily with the catcher, but with Valdez, because you have two guys that have been there for a while, and you know, you have veterans on that team, Altuve, different people like that. I'm sure that situation was taken care of before there was a reporter that even thought about going in the locker room after the game, and you know what, everybody handled it professionally, because that could have been that's one of those situations where that could turn into a complete chaos and a big black eye on your organization, and turn it into like a bad story in the middle of the playoffs. And they swept it under the rug probably the best they could, and they'll move on.
Matt Clement, our MLB analyst here at 93.7 The Fan. So Ohtani will hit tonight. It looks like he will pitch tomorrow night against Paul Skeens at 6:40 at PNC Park. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care, guys.
All right. That music means an hour early. It is time for a Donnie Football Debrief, brought to you by Saloni's Italian Bread Company, over 100 years of baking experience. Donnie, a big part of our high school football coverage. He's got a doubleheader, two games in 2 days. Friday night, Aliquippa and the Lopes of Avonworth are going to get it on. And then Saturday, Woodland Hills and Central Catholic are going to play in Canton, Ohio. Have that right? Woodland Hills, Central Catholic in Canton?
Yes, and every school that participates in this is represented by a Hall of Famer. So we don't know if all of them will be in attendance, if Dan Marino and or Jason Taylor will be there, but I was sharing with you guys before the show that Canton Glen Oak plays in the noon game.
So Ken Carman is their honorary
of that day. They play Cleveland East Tech at noon. And the representative for Glen Oak is our guy, Dan Dierdorf, Hall of Fame class of 1996.
And who is the who's the Cleveland Tech rep, do you know?
Bob Brown.
Mm. Who could forget his illustrious career?
Man, could you have a plainer name than that?
Well, I was mentioning that because The Fan will showcase a different community each Saturday through their youth football showcase with special visits from Fan hosts. Do you want The Fan to visit your game? Visit youthsports at 937thefan.com with your group name, your group's main contact info, and potential dates. Details at 937thefan.com right now. Brought to you by Steel City Shredding, Saloni's Italian Bread, and Pelman Electric. We will hear Aaron Rodgers in about 15 minutes in his own words on Steelers Jets. But first, here's Donnie's biggest football topic of the day.
The debrief, September 3, 2025. This was a question that I wanted to ask with our company fantasy football draft tonight. And the three of us, per usual, will be part of the PM team for that. Malzi gets to commission it, and I know he's very, very excited about another season of Odyssey Pittsburgh fantasy football. This might be tough for Pony to answer because the man has like 50 fantasy football teams. So it may be more for you, Chris, who has a more moderate number. Do you ever feel when you do multiple fantasy football drafts a little biased after you do, let's say, your first one, so you have like a baseline set?
Mm-hmm.
Do you then feel when you go the next couple of times around that you want to try to get some of the same players in similar spots?
And yes, in one of my drafts this year, I don't really want to tip our hand, although we're a three-man hive mind.
I mean, who cares? Look at the competition here. We're going up against the Calluses of the world and the Bechtolds.
The Roundtrees of the world have won two of these in a row, man. We can't really talk trash. He's in it again, going for a three-peat, man.
Seriously?
Yes.
Who's that team?
You like
staff?
That horse? Him, Mac, Hathorn.
Oh, geez.
There's some ball knowledge
there. Well,
then
maybe we should refrain from commenting here.
Right. Okay, so there are two players this year. I had a draft where I got one guy. I think I was picking like sixth, maybe. In the first round, I got one guy in the sixth pick, and then coming back around, snake draft style, of course, Donnie, I got a receiver where I was a running back and a receiver, and I was like, damn, that is a good start here because I am bullish on both.
Yeah.
And I have absolutely sought out that combo in every draft I've been in. Somebody, I think, in my neighborhood draft picked those exact two, and I got extremely mad that they did so.
If I admit something to you guys, will you promise not to tell anybody else about it?
You are admitting it on a radio show that is listened to by literally tens of thousands of people at any given second. There's a dude in the Netherlands named Donald, who is a friend of the show, listening to us right now in the Netherlands.
Well,
he could be in the red light district and said he's full sicko mode listening to us.
I pick out a song every year for fantasy football, and the night of each draft, which for me has been nonstop for 2 weeks, to get myself pumped up, I will listen to that song.
What's this song this year? Natalie Imbruglia,
no,
Torn?
It's One Headlight by the Wallflowers.
Are you kidding me?
No, I love that song.
It's a good song.
It's a great song. But
Bob Dylan's kid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jacob Dylan.
And so, like, I'll go into that layer that I have here tonight.
Can you name one other Wallflowers song?
No.
Can you, Don?
I cannot.
Oh, wait, maybe I can. Do they sing that song that goes, there goes my hero?
No, that'd be the Foo Fighters.
Oh, yeah, one of the most famous alt-rock songs of the 90s. No, they sing a song called Sixth Avenue Heartbreak.
Oh,
heartbreak.
Yeah, it is a good song.
And that same black line that was drawn on you is drawn on me.
Oh, that is a good tune.
And that draws me in. If Bob Dylan sang it, it'd sound like this.
Yeah.
Anyway, so One Headlight. So you're sitting there, you know.
Yeah, so I'll jam out for about like 3.5 minutes.
Hey,
and that'll get me in
come
the mood to draft.
Come on, try a little.
Why are you guys laughing at
this
me?
This is the lamest thing you've ever said.
Who was it? The 49ers that walked out with like a boombox in the playoffs? I feel like we should walk into the draft tonight.
Donnie, what would your
that
one song
be? Just blaring.
Can you take me higher?
But you know what? There's that one line in there that is like I focus on it for these drafts. There's got to be something better than in the middle. Don't be in the middle, man. Don't be an average.
Don't give me pick number six.
No, don't be an average, mediocre ass fantasy football manager tonight. Do your job, get it done, and give your team a chance to finish in the money with every draft. And I tell myself that. I give myself that little pep talk by listening to that song every night. Why are you laughing at me?
I just think it's funny. You're like, I'm giving myself this pep talk because I do not want to be an average finisher in fantasy
football.
How about
this, Pony? There's somebody else submitted this. Donnie, you can go look at the display name. I'm not going to read it in YouTube, but it's very funny. Said, the difference was actually the Wallflower's biggest hit. The only difference.
I don't know that song.
Yeah, Donnie, go look at that name that submitted that one. There's a reason I'm not saying that one on the air. That one is. That's a deep cut right there.
I'm actually looking at something right now that is like tangentially related to the Donnie football debrief that is that is actually bothering me.
Okay.
About the Steelers.
All right.
Did you see the average price of hot dog in NFL games this year?
No, but I saw the average beer price, and it's got to
be
because
wrong. The Ravens are bringing all of their price, or they have like that group of
it made the one I saw
items that are all
a hot
cheap.
Dog in Baltimore this year. $3.49. That is a respectable hot dog price
the
in 2025.
Steelers look bad.
That's a great price.
The Steelers look really bad on these, and somebody was wondering aloud if it was just AI barfing this list out because, like, it had
no,
it,
it's real.
It had it as the Pirates having way more expensive beer than the Yankees do, which just does not seem right at all. And this one in the NFL one, Pony, had Ravens, Browns, and Bengals, like, all near the cheapest possible beer prices in the NFL. The Steelers are by like a couple dollars more expensive
than
their divisional brethren.
The average price of a hot dog at Acrisure Stadium this fall is going to be $7.95.
That's what I would have guessed.
An $8 effing hot dog.
No good.
Are you kidding me? Now listen to the teams that actually have more expensive hot dogs. The Bills, an $11 hot dog.
Where do they get off?
No, it's a quality hot dog up there in Buffalo.
Hey, I think it better be.
I think it's Salins or one of like the big brands there, and it might even be longer than a regular sized hot dog.
Hello.
But still, $11.25. Vegas, of course, they probably put gold glitter
sushi
on there.
Yeah,
$10.25.
SoFi got raw tuna on it.
SoFi for Chargers and Rams is $10. San Francisco, Silicon Valley $9. Washington $8.99. MetLife for Sunday.
Stop.
$8.50.
Robert Wolf in the chat. I can't remember the last hot dog I ate. What?
Come on, buddy.
Warrior Furby, please, and I mean please, stop singing, Mulzy. I'll believe you made 9 straight threes if you quit.
See, here's what else is a bad look for those prices you just gave.
Yeah.
Outside of what? Buffalo? Those are all like massive or showtimey like markets.
Yep.
Like you said, Vegas, LA,
yep.
New York, DC.
Yep.
Yeah. The Steelers charge more for hot dogs than the Bears, Cowboys, Patriots, Eagles do. I mean, come on now.
Chicago, Boston, Philly.
That's brutal.
Those hot dog prices, Art Rooney.
Well,
they'll
have to fire three
Get
coaches
back
off
to
their
your
staff.
Fans.
They'll have to fire even more coaches.
I did see a report last night that they're adding some new concession options to the 500 level.
Oh, what are they going to It's been chicken tenders, burgers, and hot dogs and fries with interminable lines for the last 20 years.
Okay, am I wrong to say, you guys have both gone to more baseball stadiums, I think, and football stadiums than me. Am I wrong to say that in both of our stadiums, as beautiful as PNC Park is, that the concession situation is just beaten down compared to other spots? Like, for a lot of the basic, I'm talking about like some of the basics, you know, your hot dogs and chicken tenders. I just feel like it's better most spots that I've otherwise been to.
I feel like it's hard for me to.
Okay, for example, Cleveland. I went to their ballpark to go see a Guardians Pirates game not that long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just remember being struck like, man, this just feels better designed. Like, it seems like the
food's
the
concourses aren't wide enough at PNC Park, but I don't think the options there are that bad.
No, and they have been creative in the last few years of like adding new stuff. But I mean, Chris brought up the basic thing. So, like,
Maybe I'm wrong, though. This could just be like one of those anecdotal things. I'll be honest. I'm still stuck on Pony picks a song every year to inform his fantasy strategy. And this
have
year,
you kept a list of the songs you picked
headlight.
In the past?
Yeah. Has there been a song that was your most successful one? You're in a million leagues.
Yeah, Jet Airliner by Steve Miller Band. I think I won like 8 leagues that year. You ever hear that song?
Yeah, I'm not going to sing it, though, song. By request of Warrior Furby.
Yep.
Which
that
is
was
a great
My old neighbor,
name.
His name is Steve Miller.
I picked Mr. Jones one year. That was a bad year.
Now, when you did
Anthony
that,
is
did
saying,
that make
yes,
you,
I'm wrong about
did that
the
make you pick everybody named Jones? Daniel Jones,
Felix
maybe
Jones.
Julio Jones gets thrown
yeah,
into
it
the
was
party.
During, it
Maurice
was
Jones Drew.
It was during like the run of Julio Jones.
What if he had Joneses and Millers all over his team?
I made a funny video in college to Mr. Jones, and it was just random guys in the NFL named Jones. Like Aaron Jones, he just takes off for like a 65-yard touchdown.
You just put that bad boy together.
So you really think that it's unusual for me that I have a song that I listen
to?
Do
either of you guys have an all-time every year you end up with the player and you almost, it's like an old comfortable security blanket type of thing? Because for years, we had this guy on the show. Randy McMichael ended up on my team as my starting tight end for what felt like a 20-year stretch. He was not in the league for nearly that long, obviously. And I had Randy McMichael every single year I was playing.
I'm trying to think of somebody that I've had. I mean, I know who my dad would always mention. I think I've told you guys
before.
Ricky
Waters.
Ricky Running Waters, baby. I mean, he loves Ricky Waters because, like, every year in the 90s and early 2000s.
What did he think about well-dressed Armani Toomer?
We liked well-dressed Armani.
It can't be a guy that's too good because you'd have to have like one of the top picks every year to get the guy. That's why
I'm talking about
Randy,
a mid-round special is perfect.
That's why Randy McMichael's a good call there by you with that.
Oh, I ended up with him. I swear to God, I ended up with him like 7 or 8 times in a row. We had a hell of a streak going on Randy McMichael. And he was, Donnie, he was like the definition of a replacement level tight end by that point. He would just put up average numbers. There was never like the Randy McMichael game where he like salvaged victory for me. No, he just was always on my team.
I feel like Ed McCaffrey was one of those guys for me when I first started playing fantasy football.
Here's another one somebody just submitted, their fantasy comfort player, and I have this guy too now every year in redraft leagues. Ramondre Stevenson, he just finds his way to Team Mulsey every time.